Welcome to this Wednesday edition of Juno Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein with you as a host today. We've got a great full show for you today. It's going to be a lot of fun talking to everyone who's coming in here. We've got a couple of phone calls to make as well, and we'll be doing that in just a moment. There's a high wind warning today lasting until 6 a.m. on Thursday. The rest of the day is going to be mostly cloudy skies, again, locally windy. Highs around 23 degrees, ranging to 40 degrees downtown, so a wide variation of the high temperature. But it's going to be windy downtown in Juneau and Douglas with gusts up around 60 miles an hour and sustained winds of 30 to 40 miles an hour. Mostly cloudy tonight and locally windy again with a slight chance of snow late. Lows around 15 degrees. And locally windy again tomorrow as well with snow likely. Snow accumulation to about 1 inch tomorrow with highs right around 31 degrees. Today we're going to be talking to folks who are organizing the Juneau Fest 2012 that's happening December 9th through the 14th at Centennial Hall. We're also going to be talking to we'll be talking to Daniel McGrody, who's a national expert on minerals, and he'll be speaking at the Alaska Governor's Summit on Strategic and Critical Minerals happening in Fairbanks. We'll be talking to him on the phone. Roller Girl's going to be in the house here. We'll be talking to them, and then folks from Eagle Crest will be talking to us about what's happening. Now that we've got some snow on the ground, what's going to be happening up at Eagle Crest, and maybe we'll even get a little bit of news about when Eagle Crest might be opening. First, here's National Native News.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. South Dakota's Department of Corrections and a Native inmates group are working to reach an agreement on tobacco use in religious ceremonies conducted in the state penitentiary. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports the two sides are some distance apart in their negotiations.
The Department of Corrections banned use of tobacco in Native religious ceremonies at the state penitentiary in Sioux Falls several years ago. Officials claimed some inmates abused the privilege and used the substance for other purposes. Earlier this year, a federal judge ruled the state's ban on tobacco for the services was a substantial burden on the inmates' religious rights. She ordered the Department of Corrections and the Native inmates group to determine a new policy for tobacco use. But the two sides are far apart on an agreement. The state says tobacco is fine for pipe ceremonies, but officials want to be able to prohibit its use in prayer flags and tobacco ties, and inside the prison sweat lodge. The DOC also wants to limit the tobacco mix to 1%. The inmates group wants tobacco allowed at any and all religious ceremonies. They want the mix limited to 10%. The parties have until next Tuesday to file objections. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
Some Native Americans say the historic Cobell Indian Trust settlement won't do much for their communities. 500,000 people across the country will receive payments from the more than a decade-old class action lawsuit, which is now finalized. Wyoming Public Radio's Irina Zhorov has more.
Native Americans sued the federal government over mismanagement of tribal royalties and land, which has been held in trust by the federal government since the 1800s. The suit accused the government of mismanaging $150 billion in royalties, but the settlement is for $3.4 billion. Wind River Reservation in central Wyoming has between 6 and 8,000 beneficiaries. But Eastern Shoshone Business Council member Orville St. Clair says the checks won't do that much good in the community.
When Cabell first started, they were talking around the $86 billion range. Over time, that was reduced down to the present award. It's not going to have very much of an impact. In fact, one tribal leader from Montana mentioned when the numbers started to come down, probably one good trip to Walmart.
$1.5 billion will go to class members for mismanagement claims. $1.9 billion will be used to acquire land that has been fractioned or divided into small sections that are hard to use or sell. Of that, about $60 million may be set aside for scholarships for Native Americans to attend school. Checks could start arriving as soon as December. For National Native News, I'm Irina Zhorov.
Oklahoma's governor says her office has a good relationship with tribes, which are benefiting the economy. According to the Associated Press, Governor Mary Fallon stressed that Tuesday during a Native American Heritage Month event at the state capitol. Some issues between tribes and the state are water rights and tobacco compacts. Representatives from 20 of the 38 federally recognized Oklahoma tribes were said to be in attendance at the event. Federal officials announced Tuesday reforms to streamline leasing on 56 million acres of trust land. Officials say the outdated regulations are 50 years old and have stalled tribal progress. One change is a 30-day limit for the Bureau of Indian Affairs to issue decisions on residential leases, subleases, and mortgages. Commercial or industrial development will have a 60-day review. If the time frame is not met, the agreement will automatically go into effect. Officials hope the reforms will increase home ownership and expedite business and commercial development. During this month in 2009, Yaqui Indians in Mexico buried remains after an effort to get them back from a New York museum. U.S. anthropologists took the remains a century earlier from a massacre site. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation. Funding comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation. Kiwanis is accepting artwork for the 2013 Alaska Native Art Auction scheduled March 7, 2013. Proceeds benefit KNBA and Native Public Radio programming. Call 907-793-3528 for more information. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
All right, nothing but a party here. And there's going to be nothing but a party happening over 6 days at JunoFest 2012. And I've got a number of folks in here with me right now. Jody McLeod Andrews, thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, Andy. Thanks for having us.
Regis Andrews is here as well.
Yeah, it's great to be up here in Juneau on a nice fall day, Andy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, nice windy fall day. And Reverend Sam Dalen is here as well. Reverend, thanks so much for coming in.
Reverend, boy, that's pretty fancy. How about just Sam?
Okay, Sam's fine. Okay. And you can call me Andy.
Okay,
absolutely.
Thanks,
all right, thanks. Jody, tell me a little bit about JunoFest. It sounds like a really fun thing that you can't miss out on.
JunoFest is really exciting. We've got so many things planned for this community beyond their wildest imagination. JunoFest actually was in part responsible by Sam Dalen. He's chaplain for the local police and fire department here, and I'm going to let Sam share his heart a little bit first about JunoFest 2012.
Well, you know, you have a dream, and then all of a sudden you share your dream, and other people catch your dream, and it's like, wow, this is, like, overwhelming when you hear what's going to go on. It's like, I tell people, I feel like I'm in a whirlwind, and I haven't come out yet. The sponsorships from the local community have been just totally over the top, you know, people getting on board, people calling that have heard about it and say, hey, we want to get on board. What is this thing? And we just tell them, man, this is just a celebration of the spirit of Christmas. So it's started as a little dream. I shared it with a few people, and now the community's on board, and sponsorships, and so hopefully the police and fire guys will come in that I work with, and we're going to have a great time.
Well, tell me just the general kind of kernel of the idea here. You've got a lot of vendors involved, but tell me what it's honoring folks during this time in Christmas, and tell me a little bit about that.
Well, you know, I mean, everybody's been looking at the economy for 3 or 4 years, and, you know, everybody's talking about politics, and we just went through election, and we just thought, hey, you know what, we're just going to turn this around, focus people back on having fun, having a party. I mean, I just talked to one of the officers at the police department, and he said, so it's like a big block party. I said, yeah, it is, you know, and I said, so that's really the kernel, just have a block party, and it just bloomed into a big field like flowers, and it's just it's really overwhelming.
Right, and it's happening for a number of nights at Centennial Hall at 7 o'clock every night, right?
That's right, 6 nights. It's going to start December 9th through the 14th. Doors open at 5 p.m., and we have so many activities for kids. We have a huge jump house that kids will be able to play in. We have, oh, get this, you're going to love this, Andy, we have an actual extra tough contest. We're going to see who has
the
most...
gnarliest?
Yes, that's exactly it.
Southeastiest extra tough. I've got it already. Mm-hmm. I already understood. The minute you said extra tough contest, I knew what you were talking about.
And hey, wait not only until that, you we've see got, the prize.
Oh, yeah, the prizes are great. You know, what we're going to have is a couple of Christmas trees decorated with kids' extra tough shoes.
All right, there you go. Okay.
And then we have a hockey puck contest and basketball shoot contest and a dancing contest and a hula hoop contest. We'll have Christmas music and Christmas musicals and just releasing the spirit of Christmas over everyone so that they truly understand the meaning of Christmas.
And Regis, you said a picture's worth a thousand words. You showed me a photo of all the merchandise you guys had. It's kind of incredible. Snowblowers and kayaks and all kinds of contributions that have come in from merchants
really?
In Juneau.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes, the sponsorship has been very, very well received, and this is business supported. So Sears, Adam over at Sears, snowblower, chainsaw, weed whacker, Willie's Marine, a two-person kayak. So we have some big things. We've got gas grills. We've got...
Let's talk about the gas grill.
Okay, yeah, let's. I love that. Let's talk about the gas grill.
When this thing started to explode, you know, we start out, let's give away some gas grills. So we got the gas grill donated. Home Depot jumped in. Then we went out to AmeriGas. They dumped in with a couple tanks, and they filled them and gave them stickers for refills. And then we went to Jerry's Meats, got a couple coolers. Then we got $100 gift certificates from Jerry's to fill up the cooler. So, I mean, this block party you can take home.
That's right. It'll extend out. That's right.
We started off with some fishing gear that turned into a nice float tube and some fins, and then somebody else had a rod. Then we went down to the fly fishing shop, and I said, yeah, I think we could probably put a reel and some line and some flies onto it. Right now we're working with some of the fixed wing and maybe some of the helicopter guys to put a whole package together for somebody to go out and do a nice outing with fly fishing, and it's going to be a phenomenal deal.
So how does it work? You go there 7 o'clock on the night of the 9th. What happens?
Well, you're going to pre-register when you come through the doors, Andy, and you'll receive a ticket. Every adult will receive a ticket. And throughout the evening, we will just be drawing tickets. Every night, we will have like the Jigunda
whoopie-doo
package of the big deal gift of the night.
How about what happened just today, Jody? We hit the paper, and Andy, you're going to get into that, but people have heard about this, and today a car was donated for us to give away. A car.
Yeah.
Isn't that great?
Like a nice car?
Like a really nice car, yes.
Like Merry
or
Christmas.
Or did someone just push it into the lot?
No, we wouldn't. No, that wouldn't be the spirit of Christmas.
No, would
that
not.
Would be the spirit of Grinch.
That'd
Bob
be
Humbug. No, this is going to be gently used, you know, grandma only drove it in Juneau kind of car.
Right. Oh, amazing. Wow, that's
and
incredible.
And then we had someone else read the newspaper today and call me on my phone and say, hey, I just read the article in the newspaper. I want to give two $50 gift certificates to my shop. And I'd just like to take a minute right now and just read through
sure, yeah,
some
let's
of the
thank
sponsors
some of the
because,
folks who've done this. That's
you know,
great, yeah.
Rusty down at Play It Again Sports.
Yep.
What a great guy. Fellow New Englander, rah-rah, Celtics.
Yes, I'm with you.
Hello. Anyway, Rusty was just participating in the spirit of giving and over $700 worth of items from Play It Again Sports. But we have, from the downtown area, Wild Oven Bakery, Juneau Drug Company, Rainy Retreat Books, Art Such Photography and Digital Imaging, the Alaskan Fudge Company, Nan's Attic, Flash Styles Boutique, Fairweather Gallery and Boutique, Aurora Healing Arts, Aurora Project Custom Southeast Alaskan Thread.
Yeah, Aurora Project
right
is great
there.
Stuff.
Hey, how about just about everybody at the Nugget Mall came on board
all
with
right.
us.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. So Nugget Alaskan Outfitters and all the different folks
Joanne
out there.
Joanne Fabrics. Yeah. The sunglass place. Yeah.
The employees at Joanne's Fabrics, all the employees put up a big box in their break room, and they all sewed into it over $300 worth of gift items for children.
Brand new.
Brand new. We also did... Alaskan Zip Lines, Juno's Imagination Station, the Baranoff Hotel. Get this. Someone is going to win a free night at the Baranoff, plus breakfast and lunch for two.
And sounds then, good.
Yeah, it's going to be really great. We had the 2211 Salon over at the Mendenhall Mall donating a ladies' professional salon flat iron valued at $300. Woohoo! And then, of course, Willie's Marine donated the two-person kayak. And thank God for Walmart. Walmart donated a $1,000 grant to enable us to buy more Christmas toys.
Wow, all right. That's
mm-hmm.
great. Yeah.
And then we have Auk Bay Business, Student First Buses. Let me just tell you. Regis, why don't you tell about the first student buses?
Yeah, you know, we're thinking, how are we going to get to the people that maybe don't have the transportation? Because we want to include everybody, not mm-hmm. one person left out. We happened to be at IGA when they were doing the food drive, and there was the big yellow school bus, and it was packed with food. And I'm going, oh my gosh, there's a story behind this. I got to find out what the deal is. And we waited. I went around the front of the bus. The thing was loaded with turkeys, and I'm thinking, hey, we want to give some turkeys away. What? We could not find the gentleman. We did not know who this was. We jumped into the car and we just said, "Okay, we'll try and track this
sure,
person down
yeah.
later." Next thing you know, he comes out, opens up the back of the school bus, and I said, "Hey, what's happening here?" And he says, "Well, you know, gathering this up for the food drive, got $10,000 in checks and $14,000 of food, and made the front page of the paper." And I said, he says, "What are you doing?" I said, "Hey, we're looking for turkeys to give away at Juno Fest. I see you have a bunch of them." He says, "Hey, my company can do that for you. That's no problem. What are you doing?" So we tell him about Juno Fest, and he says, "Hey, I'm the manager at First Student. We can run all the transportation for you guys to and from the event. All they have to do is get to the schools, and we'll run them continuously." How about that?
Yeah, so it sounds like just every time you told the story to someone, they just wanted to figure out a way they could help as well, and that's just – what we all know is such a great thing about Juno.
The hearts were open,
right? I mean, that's what we know this community to be like.
That's true. I mean, you know, I mean, working with the fire department, the police department, you know, we had a fire yesterday. We had the big fire downtown at the apartments. We had another house fire in the valley just before that.
Right.
And everybody just comes on board, you know, and so it's awesome. And that's why part of it started out. I just wanted to honor the police and the fire guys that I work with as a chaplain. And then somebody came in and said, "Hey, can we give guns to these guys? What do they carry for their service revolvers?" And so I went to one of the lieutenants and I said, "Look, man, I don't know a lot about this." And somebody said, "Buy some Glock Generation 4s. I said, "Okay." So then I went to a guy in the fire department, and I said, "Hey, I know you have a license. Can you get these for me?" He said, "Yeah." Then I went to – he said, "What are you doing?" So then I asked the fire guys, "What do you want?" They said, "Well, you know, a lot of us moose hunt and go up north to Tok. We'd like rifles." So it just – and people, you know, people just came in, and this – it was just financial donations. So, I mean, we're giving away, I think, close to $3,500 of guns. And just so people know, you have to be a police officer or law enforcement to get a gun. We're not giving them kids. We're not starting a riot in the streets of Juno.
This is awesome.
Or to get a deer rifle, you have to be – you know, a firefighter.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Just want to clarify that because there was a few questions on that.
Well, so, and as you said, the article's in the Juno Empire today. So if you read in the Empire today, it's in the city and state section of that. Also, there's these posters you'll be seeing in the folks that have sponsored this and helped sponsor it. There's a great poster you'll see of Juno Fest 2012 that'll be in there. It's, once again, it's free giveaways. It's happening 6 consecutive nights. It's starting on December 9th. It's over in Centennial Hall. 7 o'clock is the time. Anything else? Regis, you got one more thing you want to
Yeah, just a
add
couple other El
yeah.
Sombrero gift certificates for $150. The Mount Judo Training Post, $300 worth of gift certificates. Costco, 6 gift cards for $300. The Hangar Pub and Grill, great place to eat, and we've enjoyed lunch there. And Pizzeria Roma with gift certificates. How about this? Our bowling alley down here. The people are so precious. $600 worth of bowling. So we're going to give away $100 of bowling every single night. And then Tasty
Treat. That's a lot of bowling.
That's a lot of. I'll get a little sore. That's a lot of strikes, and that's a lot
right.
of better balls, too. But. But our folks down at the Tasty Treat Frozen Yogurt, $150 worth of gift certificates. So the whole community's jumped on board. And every time we tell the story, there's absolutely no pressure at all. We just say, hey, this is what we're doing. And then their hearts are opened up and says, yeah, I'd like to do that. It's never been done before. This has never, ever been done before in the city of Juneau. And it's so difficult that sometimes people say, all right, there's a catch. What's the catch? There's got to be a catch.
There's no catch.
So I had a little bit of fun down at the market when they were all in and thousands of people there. And I says, okay, there is a catch. We're going to do a one-hour Amway presentation, and then we're going to sell you some timeshares. And that was just crack up. So no, that's not it.
That's
free.
Not what we're doing.
It is free. Trust me, it is all free, and it's all been business donated and supported.
Well, it's fantastic. It's the Juneau Fest 2012. It starts December 9th. It's going to go through the 14th. It's all happening over at Centennial Hall. It starts every night at 7 o'clock. Admission is free, as you said. There's no catch. You just pre-register so that you can have your name in the hat and be...
Doors open at 5 p.m., and if you need transportation, show up at one of the schools, and First Schools will be picking you up and bringing you warmly and safely to Centennial Hall, and then bringing you back to the schools when it's completed.
Sounds great. Jody, Regis, Sam, thanks so much for coming in and telling the story of JunoFest. And have a great JunoFest 2012. It's
going to
be a lot
of
fun. All right.
We're going to see you there, Andy.
Here's Garrison Keeler.
Here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday. It's the 28th of November, 2012. It's the birthday of Brooks Atkinson, born Melrose, Massachusetts, 1894, who reviewed plays for more than four decades for the New York Times. After he was done at the theater, he came back to the Times office, lit up his pipe, wrote the whole review by hand on a yellow legal pad, and as he finished each page, he would hand it to a copy boy to go and type it. It's the birthday of the writer and physicist Alan Lightman, Memphis, 1948. His first novel, Einstein's Dreams, made up of 30 dreams that Lightman imagined Albert Einstein might have had during the months of 1905 when he was working on his theory of special relativity. It's the birthday of the poet William Blake, London, 1757. He was little known in his own lifetime, regarded as a lunatic by most people who knew him, died in poverty at the age of 69. In 30 years, he had sold fewer than 20 copies of his Songs of Innocence and of Experience. But 3 years after he died, he was mentioned in a popular 6-volume encyclopedia of British artists. And then one of his admirers, Alexander Gilchrist, set out to write his biography. It was published in 1863. Blake had died in 1827. Life of William Blake, and it was hugely popular. And for the first time, thanks to a biography, William Blake was considered a major English poet. And it's the birthday of the novelist Rita Mae Brown, born Hanover, Pennsylvania, 1944. When she was in her late 20s, she wrote a novel, Ruby Fruit Jungle, came out in 1973, the coming-of-age story of Molly Bolt and her lesbian experiences in high school. The book was rejected by many publishers, finally printed by a small feminist publishing house, a few thousand copies. The book was not carried in big bookstores. It was sold by mail. It didn't get a single review, but it became a word-of-mouth hit, and Ruby Fruit Jungle has now sold more than 1 million copies. Here's a poem by William Blake on his birthday, a poem about an annual event in London when the orphans of the Foundling Hospital were marched en masse to St. Paul's Cathedral to sing. The poem entitled Holy Thursday. 'Twas on a holy Thursday, their innocent faces clean, the children walking two and two in red and blue and green. Gray-headed beadles walked before with wands as white as snow, till into the high dome of Paul's they like Thames waters flow. Oh, what a multitude they seemed, these flowers of London town, seated in companies they sit, with radiance all their own. The hum of multitudes was there, but multitudes of lambs, thousands of little boys and girls raising their innocent hands. Now like a mighty wind they raise to heaven the voice of song, or like harmonious thunderings the seats of heaven among. Beneath them sit the aged men, wise guardians of the poor. Then cherish pity, lest you drive an angel from your door. Holy Thursday by William Blake. That's the Writer's Almanac, sponsored by the Wall Street Journal Weekend Edition, offering articles from international writers about finances to art, food, wine, and culture. You can celebrate the weekend at subscribe.wsj.com/getweekend. And by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, celebrating 100 years of discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. Engineered by Noah Smith, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
That's Writer's Almanac with Garrison Keillor. Rested today again. We've got locally high wind warnings happening until 6 a.m. Thursday, and mostly cloudy skies, locally windy with wind gusts around 60 miles an hour near downtown in Juneau and Douglas. And some snow in the forecast as well tomorrow with accumulation up to 1 inch. With me next on the phone is the president of the American Resources Policy Network. It's Daniel McGroarty. Daniel, how you doing?
Very well, Andy. I'm happy to be with you.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us today. I know you're going to be speaking in Fairbanks at the upcoming conference on natural resources, and it's called the Alaska Governor's Summit on a Strategic and Critical Minerals. Tell me a little bit about that summit and then about what you're going to be talking about.
Sure. Well, Andy, the Governor Parnell instituted the summit last year, and so this is basically take two or the sequel. On an annual basis, looking at critical and strategic metals. And, of course, Alaska, with such a wealth of resource riches, figures very significantly in a national policy on resource development. Now, there isn't, your listeners may say, what national policy? They'll be absolutely correct. There isn't a national consensus on these issues, and Alaska is very much in the forefront. When I come up, I'll be talking about the national policy landscape against which or in which Alaska is attempting to act. What sort of legislation could there be? There is a WTO case against China for some of its resource export practices. Is that a viable, would prevailing in that case be a viable solution? And largely, what can we do to reduce an unnecessary dependence on foreign-sourced resources and substitute for that domestically developed resources in Alaska and elsewhere in the U.S.
Yeah, and what are some of the unique what's the unique position Alaska is in that role?
Well, it's rather dramatic. There's a couple of ways to look at it. American Resource Policy Network this summer did a study on the national resource on the national security side, and we identified 46 metals and minerals. Actually, it was interesting. We thought we would probably put together a list of a couple dozen, perhaps, counting the rare earth individually. So, it potentially could have been 17 rare earths, which is, of course, important in southeastern Alaska the development of...
Can you define that
Oak
term, rare earth?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the rare earth, this will cause some unpleasant flashbacks to Chemistry 101 for your audience, but the rare earths are... the series of elements at the bottom center of the periodic table, the 15 lanthanides in a row, cerium, lanthanum, and others, and plus scandium and yttrium. There's 17 metals and minerals that tend to present together. They're therefore, if they're present in concentration, you'll get some collection of all 17, but you have to separate them out. Now, what that there are rare earth metals in the cell phone on which I'm talking to you. There are rare earth metals in the laptops that we use, in the wind turbines that we want to build, electric batteries that we want to use in automobiles. CFL light bulbs, Tomahawk cruise missiles guidance systems. It's rather dramatic how many different applications have been found for one or another or several rare earth metals.
And it sounds like typically in the technology sector, sort of in sort of that high technology end.
That's right, yeah. And that's a good place for us nationally to be. I mean, America's a very inventive society. We're pioneers in high tech. Now, wouldn't we like to be able to continue to manufacture high tech products that we develop and innovate here, as opposed to having to go where the metals are, which would be in another country, particularly when Alaska and other Western states in the United States actually have known resources in the rare earth and other rare metals.
So there's that area, and that's a really interesting stuff. But is there particular mineral areas in Alaska that are high volume, that are like considered kind of the big dogs in the fight?
Oh, there are, and some of those metals are well known, and they're all the old what some folks call industrial metals or mainstay metals: zinc, copper, silver. Copper is the second largest metal by volume used by the Department of Defense. So we're talking about national critical and strategic metals. Copper rings up on that list, and it's not like it's not one of the arcane rare earths that nobody knows the names of. But not only that, because copper is also a gateway, what my organization calls a gateway metal. If you're mining copper, you have the chance, you may well be able to mine molybdenum. You will also have the chance to recover rhenium, used in jet turbines, high performance jet engines by the Air Force, regular old Boeing 777s, as well. And so those metals come only as a result of primary copper production. Likewise, zinc is a gateway to indium, which we use in our flat-screen TVs, for Super Bowl Sunday, flexible solar panels that we want to develop, next-generation solar panels. These metals that, some of whom we haven't thought about for many, many years since we've been in school, they're increasingly embedded in our technology. And we have the opportunity to mine them in Alaska and the U.S. We're not doing enough of it.
So this summit starts on the 30th, right? And who are some of the other folks that are going to be speaking at the summit? Any other names that we would know?
Well, yes. Senator Murkowski is coming back and forth from Washington, or perhaps she's staying put in Alaska in order to do this. I think she spends most of her time on airplanes to and from. Lieutenant Governor is coming. The governor, of course, has convened it. I am speaking in the middle of the day opposite a representative of JOGMEC from Japan, the oil, gas, and natural resource agency that Japan has. The United States doesn't have any cognate organization like that. We do our policy in a much more dispersed and distributed manner. But Japan is very serious about sourcing its metals and minerals, diversifying from over-reliance on China, for instance. So we're going to hear a lot of very valuable perspectives, I think. And Alaska is, without question, the single state that's taking this issue most seriously.
Is there a way that do you know of a way that people can observe this summit and what's happening at the summit, even if they can't make it up to Fairbanks?
I don't know if it's being webcast. I'm sure that portions of it, or perhaps all of it, will be eventually put on the web.
Mm-hmm.
I know that people are interested. The convening organization is really the Alaskan Department of Natural Resources, the DNR. And so anybody visiting the DNR website is going to be able to kind of get the coordinates on whatever's put out publicly. It is open to press, so there'll be some media focus. And, my view, Andy, is Alaska is very much at the forefront. Alaska understands the importance of resources, and it knows how to use resources and coexist with their extraction. And the rest of the United States is in this little bit of a mythical place where we don't realize the stuff we use is made of other stuff. And so Alaska kind of has some evangelizing to do, I think, spreading the word to other policymakers about how important this is.
Well, Daniel McGoherty, the president of American Resources Policy Network, thanks so much for joining us today. Have a great conference, and enjoy Fairbanks in the middle of December. Or the end of November.
Yes, not quite December. I'm sure it'll be much warmer in November here.
Yeah, that's right. It's much better in November.
Daniel, that's my hope.
Great. Thanks so much for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Andy.
Okay. Welcome back to Juneau Afternoon. With me next is Heather Parker, and Heather, you're with CIRC. Heather, thanks so much for coming in. You've got a free naturalization information session coming up for folks here in Juneau. Tell me a little bit about what's going on.
Next Wednesday, December 5th, from 5:30 to 6:30 at our downtown location at 210 Ferry Way, a representative from U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services is going to be giving a free presentation. It's open to members of the community, and it's on the naturalization process, or the process of becoming a U.S. citizen. So for people who are from other countries who want to become U.S. citizens, there's this whole process that goes with it, and it culminates in a naturalization test, or it's about a 20-minute interview. And the event on Wednesday, we're going to have a representative from U.S. Citizenship just talking about the whole process and asking and answering questions for the public.
What are some of the things that people maybe don't realize when they want to become a citizen? Is there stuff in that process that just always comes up as a little bit of a surprise? Or?
Well, the interview itself is maybe a mystery to a lot of people, and so this event would help clarify it a little bit. Although if they have any questions, they can call our center, and we have citizenship classes going on. For the interview, people have to pass a reading, writing, speaking test. A lot of that is just like writing a sentence, reading a sentence, able to ask questions about yourself, like where do you live, do you have any children, that kind of stuff.
Do you need to know like who the fifth president is and stuff like that?
But then there's 100 questions on U.S. history and government that you have to study and be able to answer appropriately.
Okay.
And questions like this, not who's the fifth president, but who's the first president, which is George Washington.
Right.
And then questions about government, too. A lot of the questions are fairly straightforward that most of us should probably be able to answer, like, why are there 50 stars on the U.S. flag?
Okay.
Answer 50 states.
50 states, yes.
But some of the other ones are a little bit more tricky. For example, one is, what is the rule of law? And the answer is the Constitution.
Okay.
So there's a lot of questions about the Constitution.
I probably would have got that wrong. I mean, I could probably walk my way around that, like, but I wouldn't have known it's a one-word answer.
Right. So this information session will kind of help clarify what you need to study and what you need to know and be prepared for in the interview. I think it's a great opportunity for people because the person who is giving the information session is from Anchorage, and Alaska only has one office of U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services. It's in Anchorage, and a couple of times a year they come to Juneau, and they've been nice enough to give these free presentations. So here's one of those rare opportunities where they're in Juneau and able to ask questions or answer questions directly.
Yeah, great chance just to ask all these kinds of questions, just get the mystery taken out of it, like you say again. So give people one more time when it's going to be and where and all that stuff.
So the naturalization information session is free. It's on Wednesday, December 5th from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. It's at CIRC at 210 Ferry Way. That's downtown. And if people have any questions about it, my name's Heather Parker, and you can give me a call at 586-5718.
Heather, thanks so much for letting us know about this. It's the free naturalization information session happening December 5th. That's Wednesday, and it's starting at 5:30.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Heather. Letting the good times roll. That's what's going to happen Saturday as the Roller Girls once again take the floor for about an interleague bout. Intra-league bout here happening within, it's the two Juno teams going at it. Skatey Bright and Bitter Glitter with me right now. Thanks you guys for coming in.
Thank you for having us in Decline.
So tell me about the fierce rivalry that exists between the Raven Lunatics and the Kill Cats.
Yeah, you have two Kill Cats here, so.
Okay. Oh, okay. So you can represent one side of it.
The poor Raven Lunatics can't really represent themselves right now, and we might get in deep trouble if we say too much smack talk.
Tiptoe around that.
But you're right. There is a little bit of a rivalry between our two teams. We have the Kill Cats, mm-hmm. which both Bitter Glitter and I are part of, and we have won two bouts. To the Raven Lunatics, one bout.
Okay.
So this is our this could even up the match here, or we could take over.
Okay, there you go. Yes, true dominance and is what you're looking for here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
We have a bit to work for too, because we have three new fresh meat skaters, people who have never skated a bout before, and they have won. But our skaters are awesome. I'm really excited about them. We have Maniacal Misfit. We have Kylie Wyote. We have Sassy Minx, and mm-hmm. then the Raven Lunatics got
Scara.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So we're pretty excited about our new girls.
Yeah, that's exciting stuff. You get to see brand new athletes in there, see how they handle the action. Might be a brand new star in the making. You never know when you're going to see the next mm-hmm. new star in the making. That's exciting
true.
Stuff.
Well, also, we're on our season two, and people who came to see us last season might have seen us kind of fumble around a little bit and try to figure it out. But we have schooled two established leagues so far this season, so we have learned a lot.
Undefeated.
Our travel team is undefeated.
That's
we've even beat a team that is 3 years ahead of us developmentally. So
that's right.
If you want to come to see how we've matured and turned into a real roller derby team in some way, shape, or form. Saturday will be your day, 7 o'clock at Centennial Hall.
And it is that chance to get to see all the skaters in mm-hmm. Juno here really in action, because that travel team is a little bit smaller group, and you don't get to necessarily see everyone in action that you're a fan of.
Totally. Like, there's no way that almost everybody who's listening right now does not know a roller girl. You
Absolutely.
Just don't know there were roller girls. I mean, I'm a nurse at the hospital. I could have taken care of your chest pain, and I am one of your local roller derby girls. So.
That's right. Yeah, they're everywhere, is what you're trying to say.
Kind of like
everywhere.
A little Clark Kent during the day and a little roller derby girl at night.
That's true.
Right. So anyway, I mean, what you're saying about that, Skatey, is so true. I only have the small role of doing play-by-play on the television stuff, but even in that, and I'm learning the sport as well, but mm-hmm. you see the level of the skating level and every other type of level just going up and up and up. Now there's this real strategy happening on the course as it's going through the bout, and you know, you really start seeing that develop. It's exciting.
Totally.
To see that stuff happening.
We have some of our hardcore fans like Rob Royce and Pagan and people who are out in the community stop us and say, "Hey, you guys are doing this move. You guys are doing this move." Like real athletes. It's developing into something that's really cool.
Yeah, and of course the bouts are just a blast and exciting and fun, and it's a great opportunity to get together with a bunch of friends and have a good time.
Yeah. It's going to be a fun time this time. It's the last bout of 2012.
Yes.
And then it's also the last bout that we're playing with the old rules. So we're kind of starting to phase into the new rules, which gives us a lot more hits.
Yep.
It allows us to more crowd-pleasing,
So what they're doing is they're getting rid of all what's called the minors.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no more minor penalties with the score chart of how many minors does a player have before they have so many that they have to go into the sin bin. It's just majors getting called now, right? So there's a lot of controversy about how that's going to affect the game, right?
Well, you think other professional sports, this is going to sound really unsafe, other professional sports will actually add more rules in order to make it a little bit more controlled. Whereas roller derby is kind of taking away some of the minor rules, and now it's just the big stuff. So you'll see less Aurora Project penalty box action, but more action on the track. So it's going to be pretty, and it's probably going to turn into a little bit of a faster game, a faster mm-hmm. and harder hitting.
Because it's sort of taken away the ticky-tack fouls, the little fouls, mm-hmm. that stuff. That what they're basically saying is, hey, you know, no blood, no foul, no arm, you know.
Yeah, it's not quite roller derby in the 70s or anything like that, but I can't imagine I won't take away more bruises when 2013 comes along, and I'm already kind of black and blue as it is.
I mean, some of the majors aren't majors that involve physical confrontation. Yeah. Some of the majors are just like skating out and stuff like that, and if you know, you're and all that sort of stuff. So that stuff. But I like the idea of it. It keeps the Because a lot of times what happens when you're watching roller derby, it's such a fast sport that if you don't know all the little rules really well, you don't know, well, now, why is that person skating off? Now, what just happened?
why
are they leaving?
Why is Katie Wright in the penalty box again?
What? She didn't do anything. Yeah. What's, you know, and so you're always wondering that stuff. And this is going to be, okay, if you'll know why someone goes to the sin bin now.
Yeah,
you'll see a major happen, and then you'll see someone in the sin bin.
Yeah, I mean, it's taken away a little bit of the BS.
Yeah.
So that
should be good.
So
be
just
really good.
A few more details about that. The bout is tickets are selling fast. We've never really had extra seats left over by bout day, so go out and get yours.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be 21 and older or with a guardian because we do have bars at the bout, which I know everyone appreciates. And then 5% of our proceeds will be going to the Red Cross. I know they've done a great job in our community as of lately and whenever we need them. Our doors will open at 6:15, and bring a toy. We have a box for the Great Alaskan Toy Drive.
Oh, great. Toy for the toy drive. That's a great idea.
And the after party, as always, will be at the Rondi. And I guarantee you whoever loses the bout will probably win the after party.
Now, is the after party at the Rendezvous or at Rockwell this time?
Rondi.
Back at the Rendezvous.
Yeah, it's back at the Rendezvous.
Okay.
We're kind of splitting between. They're a huge sponsor of ours. They even let us skate upstairs from the bar at the Rockwell.
Wow.
It's pretty fun.
Okay.
So that's one thing that we're always pumping. We are. We're very much connected with the community schools, and they've been very good to us. But we are looking for a bigger space. We are getting bigger and bigger and bigger every set.
You need a home court facility is
we
what
do.
You need.
And we have a community schools class that is with Jess Julie, one of our great instructors. And we have like 15, 20 people that are skating and want to be derby girls. And we're kind of outgrowing our pants here, our booty shorts. So we need another. So please, if anyone in the community knows of a space that's available, the 600 square feet.
6,000.
6,000 square feet is what we're looking for. And we'd love to work with an organization that can help us find that.
And what's the name of this bout coming up? The Tinseltown
Knockdown.
Tinseltown Knockdown. That's what's happening.
And if you see the posters, they're amazing. Just Julie made them.
Yep.
And they're just beautiful posters.
Very cool. Tinseltown Knockdown. It's coming up December 1st. That's this Saturday. It's happening at Centennial Hall. Doors open at 6:15,
yep.
as you said. And the bout starts at 7.
Yep. And then December 7th, for First Friday, we are going to have one of the 12 trees of Christmas or the holidays at Shoe Fly. And so go out to Shoe Fly and see that. We have a roller derby tree up in there right now. I went there to check it out today and then ended up buying shoes. But
oh, well. That'll happen. All right. It's the Roller Girls, Skatey Bright, Bitter Glitter. Thanks so much, you guys, for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Have a great bout. I'll see you Saturday.
Yes, sir.
Mountain high enough. Eagle Crest is just high enough because you guys have some big news. I'm here with Matt and Jeff Reclow from Eagle Crest, thanks you guys for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having us this afternoon, Andy.
This is an exciting time to be talking to you guys because you have a very special announcement to it.
That's right. As of today, we are officially going to open up for the season on Saturday.
It's perfect. December 1st. That's great. That's the target date always. And
yeah.
Some years we beat it, you know, but it's always great to open it on the target day of December 1st.
It is. It is. We are just, you know, it is going to be a limited opening in that we're opening just the Porcupine area, and, two runs, Muskeg and Dolly Varden. But it's all going to be on man-made snow, which I don't think we've ever opened on just man-made snow before.
I mean, there's some of the natural stuff up there, but just not quite enough to cover everything. Huh?
Yeah, exactly. We've got some natural, more of the top than we do near the bottom, but just not enough to get everybody down safely. So we took a look at the long-range forecast about a week and a half ago and said, you know, the only way we're going to make opening day is if we make it ourselves. And the only way to do that top to bottom is on the Porcupine area. So we mountain operations hit it hard, and everybody chipped in, all departments, and sent some people to work 24 hours a day for about the past week and a half, 2 weeks. And we're really happy everybody pulled together, and we're going to pull it off.
Cool. I've been seeing some Facebook photos of people out there making snow, you know, those things working 24 hours a day. It's really cool to see everyone out there doing that stuff. Yeah. Hard work, but it's fun to – this is a big weekend for you guys, obviously.
Oh, it is. And while it is just Porcupine, the skiing and riding should be good on Muskeg and Dolly Varden. We're going to have some nice – easy terrain on Muskeg, and then a terrain feature on Dolly Varden. So we're kind of excited by that.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the forecast for the week here. I mean, there's snow forecast for the next few days, including Saturday. Snow likely for Saturday and snow likely for the next few days. Some high winds here happening earlier in the week, but those are supposed to be dying down by this weekend. So maybe there'll be a lot of nice new freshies up there.
Yeah, and the good news with the high winds, it doesn't really affect the Porcupine chair that much. So that's pretty great. We're also going to have food service open. So you can come up and have a burger, have fries, move into your locker, get your photo taken for your season pass. Even if you don't want to ski or ride on Porcupine, get that photo taken so you don't have to miss that first powder day.
Yeah.
The rental shop will be open, and snow sports school will be offering lessons. So we're excited. The season is underway.
Yeah, yeah. What big plans for this season? Big stuff coming up?
Yeah, well, we made a lot of improvements up on the mountain again. We've got some new chairs on the Black Bear chairlift, a new electric motor on Hooters, so the big diesel hum that everybody was used to hearing for the past 30-some-odd years at the bottom of Hooter is no more, which, having an office right next to it, I'm very excited about.
A little bonus there, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to look to groom some more of the steeper stuff as we can, depending on the snow, and we're also going to have a terrain park area at the bottom of Ego. And as Jeffers said, starting this weekend even, we're going to put up a terrain park feature on the Dolly Varden runs. So while one side will be a nice little cruiser to get your legs under you if any of the kids want to come out and hit a terrain park feature. We're not exactly sure what it's going to be yet, but it could be a rail or something along those lines.
Well, that's fun to think about that kind of stuff and getting into that all season long and kind of getting your chops under you there, getting your legs under you as you want to head into terrain park stuff as it develops over the season.
Exactly, yeah. This will be first small step, and we're going to continue to move on that path as we can, the pace that is most comfortable to us. And I think everybody's going to be quite pleased with what we'll be able to offer both this coming weekend and throughout the course of the season.
Any big goals for this season, big stuff that you've kind of got in your mind as the managers up there?
Well, I think always our big goal, Andy, is Eagle Crest is an amazing asset for the community of Juneau, and we just want to get everybody up there skiing and snowboarding. So this year, if you've never skied or snowboarded, make this the year to get up there. And you can start on December 1st and take a lesson. It's a great way to spend the winter in Juneau. So much better than staying down here in the rain. Go up there to the mountain for snow.
Have you guys beefed up your snowmaking capabilities in the past couple of years?
Well, it's not really the past couple of years. This year we've made concerted effort with the cold temperatures to make
just
as much
the conditions
snow.
And we're able to
exactly
do it,
and our mountain operations team has been very gung-ho about giving different things a shot and using the resources that we have. We've been lucky from a cold temperature standpoint, not lucky from a snowfall standpoint, but we try to make up for it where we can. So our goal over the next couple of years is to kind of get the snowmaking as best as we can get it up on the mountain. There's certain limitations as far as our water access and elevations, but hopefully in the next couple of years we'll have the best snowmaking system that Eagle Crest can have, and we'll use it as we need to provide skiing and riding.
Yeah, absolutely. And so tell people how they can find out information, that kind of stuff, if they want to find out what's going on Saturday.
Well, they can find us on our website at skijuneau.com. They can look us up on Facebook. Just look for the Eagle Crest logo. They can call our snow conditions hotline. It's 586-5330. And or they can give us a call up at the mountain at 790-2000. So we're up there, we're excited, and we're ready. And we'll keep doing updates on the mountain at skijuno.com and, of course, on Facebook as well. So we want, like Matt said, we want to get going for the whole mountain just as much as everybody else does. So we're doing our snow dances and hoping the forecast comes true.
Well, so that's what's happening immediately. But while I've got you in here, what about some long-range things happening at Eagle Crest? I know there's long-range planning that's happening. There's some stuff like that. How can people get involved in that and find out what some of those ideas are that are out there?
Certainly. Well, first, you know, the biggest thing that's going to be happening in the next 2 years is we were lucky enough to have our proposal for the Learning Center passed in the most recent ballot. So beginning in the spring of 2014, we'll be breaking ground on a new learning center in the Base Area, which will house our repair, our rentals, our learning center, adaptive programs, kids programs, new ticket windows.
So that's massive news. I mean, that's
huge
improvements. Yeah.
It's, I mean, it's from an infrastructure standpoint in the Base Area, it's, you know, it is a huge, huge step. And it's going to also open up areas in the Base Lodge to create more lockers, which there's a constant demand for, and people that have been on that waiting list for a while can finally get a locker that they've always wanted and open up some other areas for us as well. So that's really the big thing that's happening over the next couple of years in the Base Area. Then up on the mountain, where we are, as you mentioned, finishing up our master planning process, and the board is finishing putting some goals together for us to go out and look at some different initiatives. As I mentioned, snowmaking improvements will be part of that, and also looking at multi-use trails in the summer.
Always a key topic there, mm-hmm. and a way of using the mountain, you know, year round.
Yep, and we'll also be looking at putting together what we're going to call an alpine management program for now, but we're really going to start aggressively looking at the trails that we do have and conditioning those to open up earlier. There's just been a lot of growth. You know, stuff can grow pretty fast here in Southeast, and our ability to kind of look at runs and start cutting them down and getting back to a smoother surface should allow us to open earlier in future years. So it's a long-range process. It certainly doesn't take one summer. It's a multi-year thing, but we're going to put that together and start really hitting the ground with that starting next summer, and that should have a really big effect on our ability to open and terrain that we do have.
And stay open later as well and all that, kind of keep the season extended as much as possible.
Yeah, keep it open. You know, we can have warm stretches in the middle of the season, too, where the idea is not to get wiped out by the adverse weather that we can get here in Southeast.
It does happen. That's where we live.
Yeah, certainly.
Absolutely. Well, Jeffra and Matt, thanks so much for coming in, you guys. Appreciate it. That's the Eagle Crest Report. We're going to be doing this every Wednesday here in Juneau afternoon as we head into the ski season, which starts this Saturday, December 1st.
9 a.m.
See everyone up there. Get there early. Avoid the lift lines. You know they're going to happen. People are going to be up there.
Yeah. And go to skijuneau.com for all the information on Eagle Crest.
Okay. Thanks so much, you guys, for coming in.
Thanks.
Well, great news about Eagle Crest opening this weekend. A lot of fun. Truly, winter has started now. Snow on the ground out there and snow up on Eagle Crest. The Porcupine Run is what is going to be open, and get there at 9 o'clock Saturday morning and be the first in line. The rest of today is going to be mostly cloudy skies here and locally windy with highs around 23, ranging up to all the way up to 40 degrees downtown. So a wide area of temperature range happening. The winds are kind of the big story, though, with 25-mile-an-hour winds, except northeast 30 to 40-mile-an-hours with gusts to around 60-mile-an-hours here downtown Juneau and also in Douglas. And then tonight, mostly cloudy skies, locally windy again, slight chance of snow late tonight with lows around 15 degrees and going all the way up to 30 degrees here downtown. Once again, northeast winds 10 to 20 miles an hour, except downtown, and that's going to be 30 to 40 with gusts of 60 miles an hour tonight expected as well. Again, locally windy tomorrow with snow likely and snow accumulation up to an inch tomorrow with highs around 31 degrees. Mostly cloudy skies, chance of snow for Thursday night as well, and Friday mostly cloudy, chance of snow. That's the forecast going all the way out through Sunday night with snow likely on Saturday and Sunday. And lows around 18 degrees and highs around 28 degrees. And snow likely again heading into next week as well, with Monday and Tuesday saying snow likely with highs right around freezing and lows around 21 degrees. Thanks so much to all my guests today, including the folks from Eagle Crest, Jeffra and Matt. Thanks for coming by. Skatey Bright and Bitter Glitter, the Roller Girls, their bout's happening Saturday as well. That's Saturday evening. So after a day of skiing up at Eagle Crest, go head to a bout. Also, thanks to Daniel McGroarty, who's going to be speaking at the Alaska Governor's Summit on Strategic and Critical Minerals. Thanks to Regis Andrews, Jody McLeod, Andrews, and Reverend Sam Dalen, who are going to be doing Juneau Fest December 9th through the 14th. And also thanks to Heather Parker. The naturalization class is happening Wednesday, December 5th at CERC. Head to that if you're interested in becoming a citizen here. Thanks for listening to Juneau Afternoon. I'm Andy Klein, heading to NPR News next.
The lesson is that when enough people get involved, we have a pretty good track record of actually making Congress work.
So President Obama wants Americans to ramp up pressure on Congress to...